Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood.
On Tuesdays, get your pop culture news and reviews with a pure Bostonian perspective on the Boston Bastard Brigade.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then on Thursdays, you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, presenting the Live Issues program.
It's going down each week. Only in the land of Ash, nerdcore at its finest.
And now, the Boston Bastard Brigade, Omnis Dream, and Psychological Productions proudly present No Borders, No Race, The World's J-Pop and Alternative Hotspot.
My bastards and wenches, and welcome to another episode of No Borders, No Race, King Baby Duck here. I hope everyone out there enjoyed the last two episodes where I spun songs from my top 20 albums of 2013. I know there might have been a couple that caught your ears for the first time, but I really do hope some of you out there checked out more on some of the artists I played. And I do want to give another big thanks to everyone who helped share their picks for favorite albums of the year. Without them, I feel like the shows wouldn't have been as special as they wound up being. Now, some of you may be wondering why there were more English language artists on my list rather than Japanese. I mean, after all, this is the J-pop hotspot. So why were there only four albums on my top 20 list that were by Japanese artists? Well, the easiest answer I can give is that last year, and maybe even some of my more previous years' lists, I didn't hear that much new music from Japan. Sure, there were maybe at least 10 I heard all the way through, but all 10 didn't deserve to be on the list. Honestly, only 4 were worthy of being on this year's top 20, with a 5th getting the honorable mention. It's not that I think Japan is failing in the music scene, because it really isn't. It's more of what I can access all the way from America. Now, if I were doing No Borders, No Race from Japan instead of Boston, then yeah, the top 20 list would definitely be filled with more Japanese artists because I would have a much closer reach of gaining said musicians. But until that day comes, if it ever does, that is, the amount of new material I'm going to be able to showcase on No Borders, No Race would probably only come from the likes of my friends like Tom and Sawa and a few other Japanese musicians I know, and anyone else from Japan that I have a close connection with. That, and I may have to wait until the South by Southwest Festival happens in March to do some detective work regarding the new stuff. For now, though, I can only ask that those who want me to feature new bands or new albums to merely point them out to me, because if I think they're great, then I will definitely give them the spotlight to show off what they're made of. Then, in return, I can tell people where to find these songs and albums, much like what I'm about to do right now. If you like what you hear, please be sure to support these artists by buying their music. And you can find just about all these releases on Amazon.com, CDJapan.co.jp, Bandcamp, iTunes, the official websites, and your local record store. We're going to start things off with the Goju Kaitens, who will be celebrating their 10th anniversary this year with a 60-day tour. Sadly, it's all in Japan, but one can hope that they'll expand to other countries, especially the US and Australia. Here's the opening song to their 2007 album, Goju Kaitens no Biribiri. It's called Koyano Otako.
We'll be right back.
Rodeo Carburetor with Precious from their album Kingdom. Some people might recognize this band from the end theme they worked for on the anime Gintama, the one with Elizabeth riding on a motorcycle. Sadly, the band members called it quits a couple years ago, so I'm curious to see if the band members are doing anything right now, like any side projects and such. I gotta do a little bit of digging to figure out what's happening, so hopefully I can figure out something soon. Now, I don't know about you, but I am very happy about 2K Games canceling their MLB 2K series. I personally was not happy when the company gained third-party exclusive rights to the Major League Baseball franchise, as I saw their games as inferior to what EA Sports was doing at the time. They basically kept copy and pasting their game each year, only updating the rosters and adding just a sprinkle, mind you, of new features. Last year, everyone finally caught on when 2K Games released MLB 2K13 and was critically and commercially panned by everyone. Now that 2K Games is no longer making these baseball titles, I feel it's high time for EA to swipe back those rights. Now I know what you're thinking. Oh no! EA! Microtransactions! It's gonna be just terrible! Let me tell you something. EA Sports created MVP Baseball 2005, one of the last great baseball titles. And if they can recapture the magic that game had, they could very well make the best baseball game franchise ever conceived. EA Sports should just forget about doing basketball, or just stick to doing NBA Jam or bring back NBA Street, and just focus on bringing back America's greatest pastime in gaming form. EA Sports needs to have dynasty mode, owner mode, old school uniforms, old school ballparks, everything from the 2005 game, but coated with that next gen goodness. Odds are the cool extras would probably be paid DLC. No. Yeah, most definitely. But it would still be a step forward in the right direction compared to what 2K Games did. Until we know who will take the third-party license, I can just go back to dreaming of what could be, because no way in fucking hell am I going to try playing MLB The Show again. It's like, in order to play MLB The Show, you've got to play Twister constantly with your fingertips, and I do not want to do that with the next-gen game. I do not want to do that when playing any sports titles. Sports games are supposed to be fun, not tedious and challenging. Yes, let me retract that. They're supposed to be challenging, but they're not supposed to be a pain in the ass to play. I don't want to push 5 buttons just to throw a pitch. Just one. And, you know, a little tilt of the D-pad or control stick. So, please, EA Sports, if you're hearing me, swipe back that MLB exclusive third-party license, right? Because I know you would do a great job with them. That is, if you can work your ass off to making it what it is. Don't do what you did with the next-gen Madden title, because that was just atrocious. Start fresh, start anew, make MVP Baseball the franchise it once was. In fact, speaking of nostalgia, why don't I play you a song from that game's soundtrack, the soundtrack to MVP Baseball 2005. In fact, somewhat thanks to this video game, I found out about this band. Well, I heard this band on the now-defunct WFNX 101.7, but I didn't know who they were until this game told me who they were. It was because of this video game that I found out about the album, purchased it, and is still one of my all-time favorites. And thanks to it as well, I sprouted up a cool friendship with one of the guitarists and vocalists. If you don't know who I'm talking about by now, it's the band that you hear every single time this show starts. I use their song, New Murder at the Old Chateau, from their first album as the theme song to this show. And this is from their second album, which I think is one of the greatest rock and roll albums ever made. The Best Little Secrets Are Kept. Here are Louis XIV with Finding Out True Love Is Blind.
on your little Asian friend while she can come if she wants. I want all the self-conscious girls who try to hide who they are with makeup. You know, it's the girl in the front with the tight pants I really want to shake up. Hey, carrot juice, I want to squeeze you every way until you bleed. I'm finding out true. And your vanilla friend, well, she looks like something I need. I'm finding out true. I want this little smart girl with your glasses and all your books. I'm finding out true. And I want the stupid girl who gives me all those dirty looks.
Rascal Girl from their Metropolis album. They just released a really cool covers album called Makeup to Breakup, where they do renditions of songs by Blood Red Shoes, Green Day, Buck Tick, and the Pixies, just to name a few. So, I've been feeling a little bit under the weather recently. As you can tell, I'm still kind of, trying to get over it. It's the season for colds and flus and feeling nasty, and not the good kind of nasty, mind you. So I decided the other day to nestle myself under the covers and watch an anime that doesn't take up much brain power, nor will it take up too much of your time. In fact, you could probably watch all 52 episodes, that's right, 52 episodes of this show in just over 2 hours. It's called Poyo Poyo Kansatsu Nikki, or simply Poyo Poyo. It centers around this adorable round cat named Poyo, who has found himself a home under the Sato household. And it's basically one of those slice-of-life shows that takes the mundane things in life and puts them into a interesting perspective from the cats. Yes, it sounds a bit like Cheese Sweet Home, but instead of it focusing on being too cutesy, Poyo Poyo actually does a great job with pushing out more of the slapstick humor. Some of the jokes revolve around Poyo's strange shape, showcasing how hard it is for the yellow tabby to do what most other cats can. However, there are some super feline things Poyo can do, all of which I cannot spoil because it would ruin the jokes. I found out a couple cool other things about this anime too, specifically about two of the voice actors. The person who plays Poyo is Ikue Otane, who I think everyone will recognize as the voice of Pikachu in the Pokemon series, as well as the original voice of the title character in Zatch Bell. Now, the father of the show, Shigeru, is played by Akira Kamiya, who played the original Kinnikuman, Ryoma in Getarobo, and, most important of all, the Fist of the North Star himself, Kenshiro. I can understand getting Otani for this, but I find it really hilarious that the guy responsible for voicing the man whose punches can make anyone explode just kind of makes me giggle. In fact, you know, do yourself a favor. If you're in the need of zoning yourself out from the outside world and need something to veg out to, I highly recommend watching Poyo Poyo. It's funny, it's adorable, and it will not fail to put a smile on your face. You can watch it legally on Crunchyroll, so be sure to check it out there. Now, I have to add a Poyo plushie to the things I want to find it in Boston in March, because it's so cute and it's so adorable. And I like the theme song too. Well, I don't want to say I like the theme song. It's been stuck in my head for the past week since I listened to it. Oh, such the suffering. Wait a minute. You know what? Why should I suffer alone? Let me play you the theme song from Poyo Poyo.
Maru kaite poyo. Maru kaite poyo. Maru 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 maru.
There, now you can all suffer with me. Anyway, let's get back to some music. Here are Poly6 with a song from their Poly6 or Die compilation album, which got a U.S. release back in the day from the now defunct Tofu Records. I miss that record company, how they would release like Glock on CL, Poly6. They even did an ex-Japan release way back when. So from Poly6 or Die, this song is called Blackout Fallout. We'll be right back. with Stompbox from their album Join the Queue. They are currently in the studio working on their third album, which should be released sometime later this year. So I'm starting to look into the new anime series coming out this winter season, and one show in particular I've been hearing about from a lot of people was one called Pupa, and it follows two siblings who are infected by a virus. One of them, the sister Yume, is fully infected and transforms into a monster. The older brother, Utsutsu, gains regeneration powers. In order for Yume to go back to being a human and stay that way, Utsutsu must let her feed on his flesh. I mean, it sounds like a really disgusting premise, but it's one of those anime series that seemed, you know, too unique to miss. The Fleming Brothers over at Wicked Anime got me all hyped up to see it, and I eagerly awaited its premiere, which was delayed due to reasons I don't quite know. Production issues, I guess. So after months of waiting, what are we given? A 4-minute long anime series. I mean, what the fuck? Now you probably are saying right now, hey, you just praised Puyo Puyo, and those episodes were only 3 minutes long each. What gives? Well, you see, Puyo Puyo was a comedy, and as we all know from watching YouTube shorts like Oishi High School Battle and Glove and Boots, comedy works well in short spurts. Horror doesn't. Horror series needs to be at least 12 minutes each, especially those that have a very long canon. Pupa has 5 volumes of manga out, which could be adapted into a very normal length 26 episode series. But this? 4-minute episodes with the cliffhangers being so rudely chopped into when you're just about to find out what the actual premise of the series is? No! This is bad! It's like how the Sherlock fan base had waited for, like, Series 3 after that cliffhanger. Only probably, like, let's say, 1/104th worst. No, 1/104th worst, I want to say. Is it 1/104th worst? Anyway, you know, imagine if they did that to Hannibal on NBC or even Grimm. It would take 10 weeks for them to go through one story arc, and that does not sound like must-see TV in the slightest bit. Only one episode has been released so far, but I'm already thinking that Pupa is going to be one of those shows where you'll have to wait until all the episodes are up before you actually start watching it. Because let's face it, having to go through cliffhanger after cliffhanger and 4-minute intervals a week just sounds like torture. I mean, check it out yourself on Crunchyroll if you don't believe me, but trust me on this. Horror series are not meant to be showcased in small intervals. It just does not work. Alright, let's get back to some music. With the new Ghost in the Shell Arise OVA series coming out, I figured I'd dig into my soundtrack bin and pull out a track from the previous show, Stand Alone Complex. Here's Yoko Kanno and Ilario Graziano with Velveteen. We'll be right back.
しもここでうまくやろう。ここで手を握り、ここでキスをしよう。ここで信じよう。回り続けよう、回り続けよう。一人じゃできない、
legendary Blue Hearts with Merry Go Round from their hit album Train Train. I'm still crossing my fingers that the band members bury the hatchet and reunite. I mean, if the Police and Stone Roses can get back together, then anything's possible. And guess what, boys and girls? I'm joined by our old friend Bluonic. Say hi, Bluonic.
Hi. Hi, it's Bluonic. Hey.
I know, he's been really busy with a lot of stuff outside of E3, but we're very happy that he's joining us here because we are going to be talking about Anchorman 2, The Legend Continues.
Yes, so it has. It has continued. I don't know.
You don't, because this is how you felt like when you got out of the film, was like, you think they went a little bit too crazy, they went too far.
Well, in all honesty, I think it's how... I guess, you know, they're trying to go towards the whole aspect of how the news is going, you know, how they went into this this really bad direction of car chases and all this other, you know, bullshit. But I think what they did was they also kind of pulled what Scary Movie did, which they did the first Scary Movie, which was funny. Then yes. The second one was kind of building off of the first one where, you know, they were kind of making funnier that way. And then they went into absolute fucking ridiculousness.
Yeah.
So I feel like they kind of were contradicting themselves within this movie, but I guess that's comedy for you.
Right, because it feels like they were trying to mirror the whole aspect of today's news with them saying, like, we don't want to give them the news they need, we want to give them the news that they want.
Yeah.
What do people want to know?
That America is the greatest country in the world.
Yeah.
They want to know about the car chases, they want to know about cute pets. And who has the best-looking vagina out there?
But, all in all, it was... I mean, it was a pretty funny movie, but there were some things that were kind of just like overkill, in my opinion, that maybe were a little bit less funny. You know, that's just one of those things that bothers me sometimes. It's like, where is our generation going, you know, like as kids and all other stuff? But I just think because there was, you know, there was laughter at some of the student parts, not just you.
Yeah.
Not just you, King. But I mean, there was parts that were just like, that's more like, I feel like, you know, like you kind of feel like more embarrassed, like sitting there like going, oh God, what am I doing? What am I watching?
Like, it's one of those like, you wish you had like a pillow right next to you so you could just bury your face in and like, I can't believe I'm actually seeing this part happen. It's like how I felt when I was watching, not the original Office, the American version of The Office. Some of the things that that Steve Carell would do on that show, on The Office, I would actually feel like, I don't, it's funny, but I feel uncomfortable with that.
Well, speak of the devil, Steve Carell, that's one of the people that I'm talking about. Brick's character and the girlfriend or whatever that.
Yeah, played by Kristen Wiig.
That was, I mean, I understand that there is some odd people in this world, but that just to watch the oddness of them was a bit too much. And to give him, I don't know, maybe Steve Carell bitched too much, probably, and finally got what he wanted. He's like, maybe I want a little bit more screen time. Give me more screen time or something like that. But I mean, in all honesty, I'm like, they almost reproduced the same movie. In from the first one to the second one, where he went through like this whole thing where he's like, I'm in love, and then all of a sudden it's a power struggle again, and he wants to be the head of the guy, he wants to do this,
right? Instead of the woman being the power struggle, it's now the Australian multi-billion
woman, but yeah, you're still doing all these other struggles, and then he ends up into this big massive fucking, you know,
glass case of emotions,
yeah, or not even that, just the massive fight, you know, the fight scene between all of the other news groups.
Right,
like,
but for this, people wanted to see what the next big fight is. And you have all these people coming in. You know what, the movie's been out for the last couple weeks. You got Will Smith, you got Liam Neeson, you got Kanye West, you got Jim Carrey. Let me see, you had John C. Reilly, Harrison Ford. I mean, you had Sacha Baron Cohen all coming in playing these small roles. You had Vince Vaughn appearing once again, reprising his role.
For a very small second.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was just one of those things where, I mean, the absolute ridiculousness of the actual fight scene, like, for them to be like, oh, look, you know, we've got a Minotaur and the ghost of
Stonewall Jackson.
It's like, can you believe there's Stonewall Jackson over there? Yes, we heard you the first time. And he's like, oh my God, Stonewall Jackson! Like, he kept on just like, and then Stonewall Jackson was trying to steal people's souls and stuff like that. Like, he was like the guy from Mortal Kombat.
In some cases, it felt like it was trying to parody itself.
Exactly. That was one of my issues. That, I mean, okay, Will Ferrell goes blind, and then, you know, his woman is like trying to keep him, you know, from becoming, you know, able to see again because of the fact that the doctors know how to fix it.
And I swear to God, there was something out there. Maybe it was another movie or a TV show, or it was a South Park episode or something. It had a very similar premise. Or, you know what? I think it might have actually been Family Guy.
Yeah, it could have been. I mean, what's the, he also was going back to, what was that? That fucking movie he did with Napoleon Dynamite, basically, there with the blades, the ice skating.
Oh, Blades of Glory, when he was doing the whole flute dance with
he was doing the jazz flute again, and of course they had to bring that back. So I'm like, oh my fucking head, are you kidding me? But of course, that of course causes him to go blind. I don't want to ruin it for you, but it's kind of dumb too. But sometimes it's just, I almost feel like, am I really getting old? Getting to the point where I'm like, I'm not finding
this
as much as I used to.
Well, look at it this way. At least it's not one of those stupid films that are trying to do references and trying to pass that as comedy. Like, hey, look, remember? This is just like in Scary Movie. Hey, this is just like in Psycho. Go laugh. There's nothing funny about that. What do you mean? I'm referencing the meta movie. Yeah, you're referencing.
Like a haunted house or something like that.
Talking about that, or epic movie, or disaster
epic
movie.
Epic movie is probably the best thing I could almost kind of compare this to. in my opinion. I sat through and watched that fucking thing, and yes, there was some things that I laughed at, but then there were some parts that got really fucking annoying.
I stopped watching at that movie like 40 minutes into it. Like, you know what? This is lowering my intelligence.
Yeah, but that's the thing I'm afraid of, is there's a lot of movies out there that are lowering intelligence, and it's kind of hard to have an imagination anymore. But the other thing I have to say is I feel bad also for the writers nowadays, because I just feel like this think tank setup that they have now is throw them into a room and keep hitting them in the face and splashing them with water to keep them up to make them make something that's funny than the last time, and they're not able to be refreshed and stuff like that. So it's like whatever they have like all the new stuff going on at the same time in the background. So hey, I can make fun of that. Let's go make fun of that. You know, it's kind of it's kind of overplayed sometimes. It's like that episode of South Park where they had the manatees picking all the stuff for Family Guy.
Yeah.
That was kind of like how I felt that, you know, like they're picking the most random three fucking things that they could find, put it together, and see what they could, you know, make fun of.
But the thing is with some of the scripted dialogue, well, I don't want to say scripted dialogue, but what I was trying to get to is most of the dialogue that was in this movie, yes, there was a script, but a lot of it was all improvised, what they were going back and forth with. I was reading about this in Rolling Stone when they were making this movie. Like, they would do, like, 20 different takes of, like, 20 different lines, and then they would go back into the editing rooms. Like, as soon as everything was shot, they had the first cut 4.5 hours long because all the jokes were, like, all pieced together. And then they had to figure out, okay, which joke works here, which jokes work here. And in some cases, yeah, they picked the right ones. And in other cases,
it was the uncomfortable. But I, in all honesty, recently I was watching on the channel bio, they had talked about Caddyshack. And they literally said that by the time they felt that they were done, they had like a 3.5 hour movie. And they had to cut it down because of all the shit that they recorded that was very funny. Like that whole part where Bill Murray is like with the ball thing and he was just doing that. They had about a half hour, 45 minutes of him doing constant joking while, like, washing balls.
Right.
And they said that they're like, it's too fucking funny, but the only problem is it's too freaking long. They have to cut it down. And for them to create everything, by the time they finished editing, they went, we got nothing really here. Then they had to include the fucking, you know, gerbil or whatever you call it.
The gopher.
They had to bring in the fucking gopher and stuff like that they had to actually get animated and do all this other shit just to fucking make the movie what it is, Caddyshack. Which is like, yet again, back in the day, they thought it was god-awful. But as the years have gone, it's like a wine. Everybody loves watching that.
Right.
You find it on TV, you're going to fucking watch it.
It's on the top of the pedestal.
Yeah.
You know, that's how a lot of people see the first Anchorman movie. I mean, don't get me wrong. I like the sequel. I like Anchorman, Legend Continues. But I don't think it's going to have as big of a following as the first one did. There are going to be some people that are going to be quoting the film, no questions asked. But it's not going to have the same hold as the first Anchorman.
I think more or less with the whole aspect that from IMDb, because I like going to IMDb because that actually has a bloodline. You know, it actually has a bloodline. It has a lot of the people that actually like to go watch movies, not just the fucking trolls that are sitting in their mom's basement, you know, going, oh, that movie sucked. Let's go and give it a negative nothing, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, they always give it the negative because of the fact that their life is fucking pathetic.
Right, and they need to make up for that by making someone else miserable.
Yeah. So, but with IMDb, there's actually like a full-on, like, you know, net out there that shows what people are actually thinking about the movies and stuff like that. And when you know that the movie dips below, like, at least a 6, it's shit. It's usually a shit movie.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you have some personal experience that goes towards that movie. I have a lot of movies that are probably under a 6 right now that I love watching, but on IMDb, it's like a 6 or a 5 or a 4 or something like that. But yet, this movie, because of how full it is, because of the cast and whatnot, it's a 7.1 as of right now on IMDb for the second Anchorman.
Yes.
Before it's 7.3. So I guess it went down a little bit, but yet still it had captivation of everybody loving to watch it. I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah, it's one of those films that I feel like, it has a lot of great laughs. But it doesn't hold you the same way, as I said earlier, as the first one, because there really wasn't a film like Anchorman before it even came out. Even a film like Network, which was more of a satire than the parody that it was Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy. Mm-hmm. Network was a great movie. I'm mad as hell. I'm not going to take it anymore. People still quote that line to this very day. And then you have Anchorman. People are still going to be quoting Sex Panther or...
Brent, where'd you get your grenade? I don't know.
Yeah.
More or less, yeah. I mean, there was a lot of stuff in there. And then, I mean, probably they're going to be like, how did you get a... how do you have a Minotaur? That's not even a real fucking thing. It's mythology or some shit like that. You know, that one is probably one of the quotes that probably stick. But still, I mean, like, there's things that you can do, right? Yes, you can take a shitload of actors, you know, like how they did with the whole fight scene, where they brought in Will Smith, Kanye West, Jim Carrey, all the fucking people they brought in, stuff like that. And they were just running around doing one-liners and shit like that, like, you know, bringing the fucking airstrike or some shit, or they're dropping friggin' mortars on everybody, and, you know, there's just crazy shit going on.
Right, and we find that funny because we have all these actors that you would not even expect to show up in a film like Anchorman 2.
But it almost felt like that was movie 43. Like, it had a bunch of people come in and out of nowhere, speaking of the devil, like, some of the people that were in that movie were in movie 43.
Some of them, yes.
Some of those people will just gladly fucking come onto the movie screen or the silver screen or whatever the fuck you want to call it, and just do the actual, like, little, like, tidbit, and then go home and, like, hey, I got, like, an extra, like, 50 or 100, whatever grand I got out of that fucking thing because I showed up. You know, that's the thing. It's like...
Well, at least it didn't have Hugh Jackman with a ball sack under his chin.
Yes. But it did have what's-his-name, so... remember that whole gun scene in 43? Who was it? Greg
Kinnear?
Yeah, Greg Kinnear. That guy. He was in there.
Yeah.
He was in Anchorman. So it's like... Of course, he comes out of nowhere acting like he's fucking Xavier. Professor X didn't fucking figure that one out.
But right.
Anyways, it's an okay movie, in my opinion. I mean,
yeah.
I probably, once it pops on, like, the movie channels, you know, I'll probably just let it go or something like that and just watch it. Clean the house or do whatever and while I have it playing in the background and maybe get a laugh or something like that out of it. Me a couple more times. But I don't know.
What I'm hoping to see, and odds are that they're going to do it, is...
Third one?
Well, not a third one. But, like, an unrated cut of the second one. I want to see the lines that were too funny, but too R-rated to be put into a PG-13 movie.
Yeah, I mean, in all seriousness, I mean, they were saying a lot of swear words. They were, like, saying shit. I mean, hell, Will Ferrell said, fuck, fuck, fuck. He was, like, when he was talking with a kid or something like that, and he wanted to, like, basically punch the psychiatrist in the face, he just...
Yeah.
Yeah, he just
decent, you know, so. But a PG-13 film these days, I think it's that they only allow two fucks in the movie.
But yeah, for the most part, I think it depends on the person who's sitting in the seat. It really does. Like, when you sit in the movie theater and watching the movie and stuff, I still couldn't believe that there was a guy that was in front of us that, like, watched his, like, 10-year-old kid or something.
Yeah, this was it could have been worse. I mean, you could have taken him to see Wolf of Wall Street.
Well, seeing that you saw that and you told me it was just basically Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll, or the whole basis of Wall Street. Yeah, sure. I can see that.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I mean, I kind of try... I don't know, like, I've heard my nephew go to a bunch of movies that I was just like, I don't think he should have been seeing that movie.
And that's understandable, because... You know, when we are kids, we just think, oh, we want to see everything. We're going to be totally fine. But then when you grow older, it's like, I'm actually kind of glad I didn't see this until I was at this specific age, because I wouldn't have realized what it was I was actually watching.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I don't know. With all the shit when I was younger and stuff like that, and watching it, you know, watching stuff on TV or watching movies or whatever, you know, I felt like I was a lot more mature. But, I mean, when I got to this point, I was just like, wow. That shit really fucked up my mind. I don't know if I'm dumber because of it or whatever, but yeah, I don't know. I think I may have been affected because of the movies I've watched.
Yeah, and we were talking about Caddyshack earlier, and it's funny because I was like 6 years old when I first watched Caddyshack on VHS uncut. And it wasn't until, like, I was 17 or 18 when I first realized all the stuff that was in there that made it rated R, the topless women and everything.
Yeah, I was kind of clueless when I was younger and stuff too. I got made fun of a lot because of that shit, but I mean, I don't know if that's because maybe like I was told not to watch MTV when I was younger. So like,
same here. I was told not to watch it, and all the other kids are watching it.
All the other kids are watching and stuff like that, and they're like, "You don't know what pubic is," or something like that, or then you get made fun of. It's like,
yeah,
you know. So I just feel like a lot of these kids are knowing way too much stuff way too early. But yeah, I mean, to bring them to a Ron Burgundy movie, maybe just.
No, it's too. It's like the
situation. It's overload. I mean, I felt like that kid kept looking back at us when we were laughing, but also he was looking at brother, father, whatever the hell he was, going like, "What does that mean? Like, what does that mean?" You know. So
I mean, it could have been worse. I mean, what the hell was that guy all the way in the front? Like, he was like.
I think he was special needs dude.
He was talking to the screen.
He was special needs dude.
I know he was. But I'm just stating, he was talking to the screen as if they were going to respond back to him.
Yeah, that's you know, that's how it goes, but...
but not in a, oh, don't go in that house, y'all, don't go in that house sort of situation.
That's not even one of them. Yeah, so, for us, I think we can wrap it up. What's our rating system again?
0 to 5, and, you know, I can give Anchorman 2, The Legend Continues, a 3.8 out of 5. From my perspective, yes, it's funny. It's not as funny and memorable as the first one, but it's got a lot of good, genuine laughs. And I am still curious to see what got cut out, which is why I'm crossing my fingers that they do, like, an unrated version on Blu-ray or something.
Yeah, if it was unrated, uncut, and all that other fun stuff, and yes, you have 4 hours to kill in a day, yeah, that'd be rough. In my opinion, probably around a 3.4, I would say, because of the fact that, I mean, yes, there was the funny parts, like King was saying, but there were some redundant parts that were just, I felt like it was just a bit too much, and it just didn't need to happen. But I guess whoever the people are, the bigwigs that have the money and are running the movies and doing whatever, just felt like, oh, whatever, it's Will Ferrell, let him just do whatever the fuck he wants, it's Will Ferrell.
Yeah. And that's why I feel like this movie was finally been able to really make, you know, because it was like, it took them 9 years to finally make a sequel.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at Boondock Saints. Look how long it took to make a sequel for that movie. So,
10 years.
That took a long ass time. I mean, probably waiting another fucking 10 years or waiting until he creates an actual TV show for Boondock Saints to see another one. So, I mean, it just depends on who's willing to put the time, the money, and all that other fun stuff into the actual, you know, people that want to produce the movie.
Right.
But also, if you just do it too fast, like they did with like fucking Starship Troopers movie, they fucked it all up.
Yep. You gotta time it properly.
Yep.
If you want a good movie, you need to time it. You need to separate it, like, at least 3 years.
And then not turn it into a Japanese anime that sucked ass.
Yeah, even I have to admit that was terrible.
The graphics were okay, but they weren't as good as the fucking ones they did for that Final Fantasy movie that they made.
Yeah. Alright. Blue, thank you so much for joining me on this segment for No Borders, No Race. Alright, one of my favorite bands to interview with had to have been Apocalyptica, who just released a live album entitled Widener Reloaded, where they perform new material inspired by the works of that popular composer with the MDR Les Big Symphony Orchestra. From that album is Stormy Wagner. We'll be right back.
からだったかお前のことが好きになったよ。いつからだったかお前のことで頭いっぱいさ。俺たち大人になってしまったね。もう二人きりになれないのかな。だからキスキスキスキス Kiss me babyその日だよ。楽団のボタンに多めに外して気のないふりしてカッコつけてさ、バス停に並びお前を見ていた。あれから何人だったのだろうね。だからキスキスキスキスキスキスキスキスキスしておくれよ。
From their Love is Rolling album. Currently, they are touring as the band The Rubies, though I'm not entirely sure why they changed their name of the band. Perhaps there was another group called The Emeralds? You know, that's usually the case. That about wraps up this week's episode of No Borders No Race. Remember, for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bash Brigade, you can find us at www.b3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, song requests, if you're a band and want to be featured on the show, or if you have any questions for our dear Sawa Sensei, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbassbrigade.com. I'm on Twitter at king_baby_duck. Bluwanik is under Bluwanik. And you can follow us on Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com. And let's not forget about facebook.com/bostonbassbrigade. And don't forget to check out the other shows under the Land of Ash, including The Electric Sisterhood, Geek Aggro, and The Issues Program. We are going to end this show with a new song from Special Thanks, who just released a great new EP called Move On. I guess they might have gotten my memo when I reviewed their last album, telling them to ease off a little bit on the bass drum, and it looks like they did. So, yay for that. Anyway, from that EP, Move On, it's called After Five. And until next time, this is King Baby Duck reminding you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard, but it sure is.